Hey, this is Stephanie from Color Me In, and we're just going to dive in today because I don't have a band to recommend. Who do we have?
Hey, this is Tommy McKenzie.
Tommy, what do you do?
I play in a couple bands.
You play in a few bands, actually. Yeah. I didn't piece together how many until, like, I think I ran into you at the deli, and I was like, oh.
Yeah. It's been
busy.
Exactly. No, it's been denser before, but now it's really? Just this band called Net. And then a band called Esther Drang, and then
you toured with the Bunnymen with them.
We did tour with the Bunnymen. Yeah. That was very fun, man.
Yeah, yeah, the Bunnymen are like one of the first kind of like in that genre that I started listening to. Mm-hmm. I got super into like Joy Division and like Susie and the Banshees and the Cure. And
totally,
the Bunnymen were there, and I was like, oh man. I love the Bunnymen.
Because you know the Killing Moon and you kind of seem pretty in pink.
Donnie Darko.
Exactly. And then you're like, oh, those songs are all right. Because when my friend, Bryce, the singer, contacted me, he's like, hey, we're opening up for them. I was just like, okay, I know some of these songs.
Yeah.
And then going back to like their earlier stuff, and they play really just their first four records, and they have about like eight maybe, but all that is such like influential sort of like, I mean, it's almost punk in its own way.
Yeah, I think it's technically classified as post-punk is what they call it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just really love the Bunnymen. They're kind of, there's like an argument going on with everyone that they're kind of like a dubious band because they didn't do anything important, but they're still a fun band.
I mean, that of Ian, they're all so kind to us. I got to have a lot of good conversations with most of the other auxiliary players because all the other, so Ian McCulloch and Will Sargent are the only two original members still in it.
Yeah.
But everybody else we became really close with, but we played with them like in an 18-day tour around the U.S.
Yeah.
And then I think like six in Canada. And the last night we were in Montreal and just went on and on. We just started talking to each other about the differences of American serial killers and British ones. And he knew a bunch of people I didn't know and vice versa. But it was just like...
That's interesting.
Not talking about music is kind of more interesting.
Yeah. So. My first like handle on everything was I don't know if you listen to their song Bed Bugs and Ballyhoo.
Mm-hmm.
That was like my handle on everything because I just really love that song and it's a cute song. But
he's a personality. Yeah,
he really is. My friend has met him a few times and she like loves him. But it's interesting. He's an interesting dude.
Really, we saw him without his sun because he wears his sunglasses all
you
the
saw
time.
Him without his sunglasses.
We felt like we should exactly, but then we walked by. We're like, oh, we shouldn't have seen it.
No.
We felt really guilty. Yeah, I was just like, sorry.
I need therapy for this. Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, so you play with Net, you play with Esther, and then you also play with
AMP.
Yeah, which I don't know if I told you this, but AMP and Net are like my top five favorite bands.
Oh, thank you.
Not just from Oklahoma, but just like in general.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm not just saying that because you're here.
Oh, no. Thank you.
I generally I have a lot of friends who like post-punk and like experimental music.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept telling them that they had to check you out and they just never listened to me. And then we saw you guys at Norman Music Fest and they were like, we got it.
Oh.
And I was like, I told you. But it's just really nice that Oklahoma has that because I think we're saturated with a specific type of sound.
Exactly. I think it's, you know, there's these different logics of you can form a band in a lot of different contexts.
Yeah.
And like with AMP, you know, they're members of the Starlight Men's, Gentle Ghost, Flaming Lips, 90s band, and whatever I do. But then everybody just, we all play together because we're just such great friends and practices and all that stuff. So you, and that's always been my big thing of playing music is like, if there's no camaraderie, then there's not really a whole lot of reason to do it. I personally feel.
Yeah, that's kind of how I am too. I feel like the school lacks that. And I don't know if it's a cultural thing or if it's a generational thing or a genre thing. But I definitely agree with that. And I would rather play with people I enjoy and are more mediocre in their playing than like good players that I just don't really connect with.
Exactly. I mean, it's just all about if you have a personality in what you do. And to me, by no means, I don't think I'm a great musician at all, but I feel like I've been able to play with a lot of different people over the past 10 years just because of like, I just like playing with people and hanging out and just you garner your own way of playing, even if it's not technically good.
Yeah.
You
have your own. I know about that.
Sound.
Yeah.
So
you play with AMP too. Do you play with anyone else?
Oh,
you recently played with, can you talk about it? The recording that you were just
I did some recording with Nick and Matt from The Lips and Brothers Green. I've known Matt for eight or 9 years. We were just best friends. Love Nick. Mm-hmm. And that we just kind of came up there and just that sort of thing. Just like, hey, play on top of this piece of music. Like, okay, then of that sort of stuff, it's fun because I try not to, if you overanalyze it and you overthink about it too much, it just kind of sucks normally.
Yeah, I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. But you have to go through that. You have to figure that out on your own. As obvious as that is now to you, you have to go through the trial, so to say.
Yeah, definitely. Can you talk about your setup? Because I saw your, I snooped. Well, I did research for the podcast, I'll say. And your setup is insane, but it's
is it? I don't know.
Well, I think, I don't know what band it was for. I think it was probably for, you play guitar for amp and then bass for Net.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it might have been Net, where you have like a synth bass and you had another synth and then you just have like a gigantic pedal board and wires everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, this is kind of a hot mess of things.
It was cool. I was sending it to my friend. I was like, look at this, because he's super into, he has a bass synth now, or synth bass, and we're trying to like play with sounds with it and stuff.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah.
Yeah, with that stuff, it's a, yeah, it's a, what is it, like, it's a Moog little fatty that I'd use in Star Death and White Dwarfs. And so that one just has a good bass sound and just run it through. My logic of pedals is you just have it like a color palette. Like my biggest inspiration for that would maybe like Graham Coxon from Blur. Because he'll just run through different sounds all of a sudden and have his main sort of real dirty guitar sound.
Definitely.
But we'll just run through everything else. It's like, well, let's just have these three things that I can use comprehensively, and then the other five or six are just noises that you can just turn on really quickly and turn off. So that's sort of just exciting, just kind of don't have to use it like in a practical way. That like the less practical nature of guitar pedals I'd like a lot more than the more tone or monotonous nature of the thing.
That's interesting. I like that. That's cool.
Well, yeah, but just that bass and the Korg MS-20, which that's pretty
cool. Oh, I have the 2000.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I didn't know you had the MS-20. That's cool. Yeah, because I go to school with a bunch of guitar players, I feel like it's very practical, like, what you use, but I've recently just kind of, I really got into Brian Eno and, like, just, like, atmospheric stuff, so playing with that, and it doesn't have to be quarterly good, if that makes sense, but it sounds good. So it's just been kind of that.
Yeah, it's just like whatever the instrument adds to it. Because it gets a point where it's like almost like hate guitar. Like I love it, but then it's just like the more music I like, it's the guitar that is used in a much more abstract, not even atonal avant-garde, but just something where the guitar has a different role in the band.
Yeah. Do you listen to St. Vincent?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Her playing's great.
It's
insane.
I don't know a guitar player that does what she does in that capacity.
Yeah, because it's just like really sporadic, but she's really technically good simultaneously.
Yeah, it's not fair. I don't know. Oh, you also work for?
Keeley Electronics,
How's that?
It's really fun. I do all the printing and stuff of all the guitar pedals. So
like is it 3D printing is what you do? Or
how would you describe it? It's like this, it's this enamel ink. I don't know if this is very interesting, but it's this enamel ink that is cured by UV light instantly.
That is really cool.
So it'll go over and you can throw in something to the program and you can kind of get it to where, and me and my friend Robbie, we will work on it together and he can get it made down and he'll send it to me, then I'll print it. But you have to keep up with the maintenance of that thing. But yeah, you get to be around guitar pedals and just hear, like the new one they just did, the synth one, has been my favorite thing.
The synth bass one,
yeah, it's bizarre.
It's so weird. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very, It says no words, just
But it's just something different. But they have a lot of that because they have a compressor pedal that's really, really famous. Yeah. So then we'll do stuff that's more practical and stuff that's more out there. But we get to just hear all these different iterations of things, which is pretty fun. So, yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Do you want to dive in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool.
Yes.
Yeah, so wait. Before we do, you tell them what you just told me about going to college.
Oh,
I think this is, as someone who started college right out of high school, I think talking about it after you go to, like, once you've had a few years to kind of settle on it, I think is really important.
Absolutely. People. No. Yeah. So my story is, so I graduated from high school in like 2008 and then went right into OU and I wanted to be a journalism major. That just made, I mean, I wasn't like the most passionate about it, but it's like that makes sense to me as a person.
Sure.
So started doing that and then just kept hearing, you're not going to have any jobs in journalism at all. They're not going to be existent, which is extremely discouraging.
that is, yeah.
Like, just immediately.
And I'm going to punch whoever told you
that. Right, yeah. It was just like this class of 200 people, like this mass media class, I think.
Oh, no.
But then I started doing that. And then you go to a new situation, and I have all my friends now. But at the time, I was just really lonely and depressed. And you're in a dorm, which that feels just, like, yeah, extremely. But yeah, so I did that for a bit, found better confidence, and then I did English literature when I left, and then I went to ACM for, I guess, 2 semesters, and then I was like, I think I'm just going to do the music thing and kind of get myself together. Mm-hmm. Was able to do that to a good degree, and then in the past 2 years, I was like, well, I would like to finish up that English literature degree, mm-hmm. and of coming back now, I feel way more in it, and I'm able to compose my own ideas, and even of something like writing papers is almost like the creative process of like writing music. You're like, okay, well, I can throw a bunch of stuff at it and then just redact it and shape it.
Yeah.
And if you feel remotely motivated about what you're writing, because I just did a big paper on Pablo Picasso's Guernica about the Spanish bombing. So just like going into that and all those different motivations. But of something, it's okay to go when you're actually motivated. Because I wish I would maybe waited, but of seeing a lot of my peers that are, you know, 10 years younger than me, should not even be in college at the moment. But they can come back later. But I think there's always a time to come back to it.
I think that speaks volumes of how we have these expectations of like, I have to finish this at this age or I just won't make it.
Exactly.
Or this is, especially like being young because your brain's not developed, that you just don't have that foresight to realize that not everything is 100% or like 10%.
Exactly. And you have no, is this, you're supposed
to just go back to do things and like you can change and it's fine.
Exactly. And you kind of have to, there's always a reason to do it, and you have to find your own motivation and your own way to move through it. Because if you're writing about something unmotivated, of course it's going to suck because you don't care about it.
My senior thesis. Yeah. Oops. But yeah.
But yeah, so where do you want to... So I got like a top 10 list, and then I did... Because I've realized you and I are both very big Nick Cave fans. I did like a whole...
about crying to Nick Cave.
Yeah, whole Nick Cave thing, so...
Yeah, it's really up to you. I mean, if you want to start crying about Nick Cave,
I could definitely.
Yeah. I won't say no.
Okay. So I was trying to take it back to like, how does this all link up? And even all the guitar talk, I think that's why I love the guitar a little bit more now is because of how Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds use it, and even to a birthday, which isn't these.
Birthday Party was so influential for me.
Yeah.
With tones.
Exactly. And it's just not in this because you hear enough like, I mean, you can go on and on about all the normal guitar tones out of anybody, but theirs were just so creative and it adds to the narrative of his songs, I think, which it's more of the role to, oh, his lyrics are the most important part of this, but the guitar, but then you're like, oh, then the guitars are meant to support that, but it's really interesting because it's not anything you would think of a normal use in the way of, but yeah, I'm trying to think of when I first got into Nick Cave.
How old were you? Where was it? Where were you in the state?
I think I was. Something. So I've always had like a pretty, because I wrote down this list of inspirational things. I've always just, you know, a lot of morbid curiosities as a child.
Yeah.
So I remember my father is a defense attorney. And
wow. So yeah, definitely.
So you hear a lot about that sort of trip. And when I was a kid, we would watch all these documentaries on the JFK assassination when I was like 5 or 6, which was just really, I mean, it's brutally morose, but it's just very, it's a warm memory in its own sort of way.
Yeah.
So he would have these documentaries and he'd have a book about it and it would be pictures of the autopsy and them opening up his head and his brain and
his
all that.
His brain, do they normally, well, he got shot on the head.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But that was the tricky thing is that the sutures were kind of off. So that's why the things of conspiracy of the body being manipulated are because of, there was a lot of strangeness about the whole thing. So always having morbid fascinations of things, getting into Johnny Cash when I was in 8th grade and like, oh, he sings about murder and stuff like that's cool.
Feels like a natural progression.
Exactly. Yeah. Then I remember I had some friends in college, they just gave me their whole, you could just trade iPods, you know, like just trade your whole iTunes library.
Oh, wow.
At one point, it was a lot easier thing to do when iPods are still around, but we...
Well, they're making a new one.
I saw that, So maybe you can do that again now, I don't know. But
I'll send you a playlist.
a flash drive, maybe. Yeah. But
what's a flash drive?
Right, oh my God. But they had just all this Nick Cave stuff, and I'd heard about Nick Cave. You hear about Where the Wild Roses Grow, Murder Ballads, any of these things, and then I guess I had a concept of how it sounded in my head.
Yeah.
Because he's, really intense-looking dude, or even It was in a Gothic article in Spin, which is not even fair at all, but it's just like, oh, okay, he's like Morrissey or Robert Smith or Ian McCulloch or something.
That's so funny.
And then I listened to it, I was like, what? Well, yeah. What is this?
He kind of is, but he's very just like Nick Cave.
Exactly. He's his own sort of, it's his own sort of intensity. So I listened to it and it was pretty like unappealing initially. Like I liked Okay, Deanna, a very likable song.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, well, maybe that's just not for me. And then when I went to college, that Dig Lazarus Dig had come out.
Okay, yeah.
So way more electric and brutal.
Definitely.
And then they had Grinder Man. All those records came out. It's like, okay, I can get behind this. This is really gnarly and visceral.
Yeah.
And then I just started like, okay, well, these records aren't around anymore. Then going back and listening to like Let Love In. Mm-hmm. And then
that album breaks my heart.
I know. It's just listening to it, just the pace of it, and it's creepy and it's really intense in these not normal ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just very exact when it gets really it's very intentional, all the chaos and stuff. So just of having a period of like 2012 getting really into him, and then that's when Push the Sky Away came out. And then getting to see him in Dallas, and it just blew me away, because it was just, I was always way into like screamo bands and stuff where like you have a really insane band and frontman, but all the music is really heavy, so it makes sense of their movements. And then Push the Sky Away is not intense at all.
When you listen to it, got a lot of flack for that reason, but it also got a lot of praise for that same reason.
Yeah, because I was getting into, at the same time I was listening, I think it was just the blossom of musical preferences opening for me in a lot of ways. So I was like getting into krautrock and getting into Can, and
I think that's kind of when I found out Nick Cave too, was when I was discovering krautrock and all that stuff. It just makes sense, I guess.
Absolutely.
Those are the birthday party
listening to that, and then having the Junkyard it's the called. Guy that looks like the Rat Fink illustrator. Dude, like liking that. But then, you know, you get into things like Tangerine Dream or Suicide and all these things, and you're like, then you listen to his music, like, oh, that stuff is, that's what's behind, then that could get me into it more. And then seeing him live, he brought this otherworldly sort of intensity to something that doesn't really, that you wouldn't garner on your own. And I was like, he just whipped everybody up into a frenzy, because I remember going, everybody was dressed in like their Gothic best, like black, like nice dresses, nice suits and stuff. And then, I think you're expecting this kind of a nice evening, or maybe I was at least, and then he just whips into this frenzy, and it's just like everybody's just going nuts, and the band's going wild, and it's just something about, I think, like I'm not Southern Baptist, but my grandmother was, so seeing like a really frantic person on stage, like a preacher, was always, not what he was saying by any means, but just that imagery is really intense and cool. And then it just brought together morbid natures and music and all these things in one presentation. I was like, I'm totally in now.
Nick Cave is powerful.
Extremely.
I think it's because of his background and like all the religious stuff he dealt with, but I saw him in Bomb Factory in Dallas.
Nice.
Last time he came here after Skeleton Tree got out. So that was like interesting. Mm-hmm. And he had a little time after his son passed. So it was kind of not as heavy as the other shows that I had heard about, but it definitely felt like a congregation. Thanks. It definitely felt like that, but like not scary.
Totally.
He's got a presence to himself, and he's very kind of, he knows how to control a crowd, but it's not manipulative in the bad way or trying to convince you of anything, but it feels like he's saying, I'm here and I've understand how hard life can be, but I also understand how beautiful it is, and I want to rejoice in all of that with you.
That's beautiful. Absolutely.
Just kind of like,
I mean,
sobbing, and he's crying, and the band's just like really into it, and everyone around you is like just really into it, and it's so beautiful. And
it's just this guy that
and he's like 6'4".
And
you're just like,
chains and gold rings. It's just it's just this guy is crawling on top of you. It's just like, this is such, it's such a,
normally you'd be like, fuck off,
exactly,
get off of me, but you're just like, it's Nick Cave.
So yeah,
cool. He ran into the crowd, and there's like a little like riser thing, and he just stood on that, and it was like in the middle of everyone, and we were just all like, what do we do?
Right. Yeah.
And it was just insane. He doesn't care.
No.
Beautiful, but it's also like intimidating. because most people care in that they're like anxious and like aware of their surroundings, but he's just like, whatever. But I feel like if you're Nick Cave, you've gone through enough shit to be there.
Absolutely. I mean, that music for me has been in these times in my life where I have an utter lack of confidence. That has like been my confidence for me.
Yeah.
And even of the songs of, like for instance, like there's that song Straight to You from, is that Henry's Dream?
Yes, I think it's Henry's Dream.
So it's on that one. Like I remember, like I related to in the past being in an abusive, really abusive relationship, like 3 years ago, of that song almost being, I don't think it's actually about this, but it's just of like straight, because he's taught thunderbolts and lightning and all this imagery about somebody dying, but you're still going to somebody. It's like, oh God, you're still so tortured. You have a codependence on this very negative presence in your life. Yeah. And of him, and you can relate those songs and put them in all these different contexts.
His writing is very, like, you know what he's talking about, but at the same time, you don't.
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating. And his imagery is gorgeous. But yeah.
Even this, the bass line of, I've always had an appeal of somebody looking very disheveled in a well-fitting suit, just like this insane, like Warren Ellis or him. Yeah, then you're like, but you look really nice. That's just like, I just have loved, even my dad would always wear suits as an attorney and like into Interpol in high school into a degree of like that dress style I've always found very cool.
So, I think I like Nick Cave, and I'm also fascinated by like everything he does because he has this juxtaposition of like dirty former heroin addict, like just crust punk, but he's also like very like he wears suits everywhere and he's very calm, and when he speaks to you it's like very smooth and he's very well spoken and it's just kind of like insane.
Yeah,
because it's like those two meet and you're like, this is weird, they're not supposed to meet, but it works so well.
Yeah, maybe
I love it.
It's like a blend for, you know, people like you or I, or you just get all your imageries of being like, I was raised Catholic, so like
I was
even
too, and I'm sorry.
But all that religious stuff makes it like, oh, I get like the death, the apocryphal nature of some of this stuff.
Yeah, and I think he was raised Catholic too, I don't remember. But I think his imagery comes a lot from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Catholic imagery and I love the paintings and everything. And that's kind of where I only stayed with it. But I think it's just so prophetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really beautiful. And I don't know.
Well, it's like angelic and it's just all these things that are tortured. And it's just,
enhancing them in a weird way.
Mm-hmm. Like enhancing the morbid fascinations, you just see just death. You're just like, oh, okay, you can find your logic in that. But trying to think of where else we could take this. I mean, I have like a list of albums, but even just I could just go on and on.
I mean, we go into like five.
So okay,
whatever you want to do.
Let's see. I think just of listening to it too. It's
did you watch his movies?
I did. I love movies and books.
I was. I haven't read any of his books. But I've read like excerpts of them and they're so beautiful. Mm. I hate them. But yeah, his movies, I don't know why I was expecting to like a documentary when it very much was not that. And then 20,000 Days?
Yeah, 20,000 Days on Earth. Yeah.
Yeah. That was nonlinear. And I was like, of course, Nick Cave would do a nonlinear documentary. But yeah.
Because it makes sense, but it's also like, oh, this is unreal. This isn't real, but this is real at the same time.
Which is Nick Cave.
Exactly. That's Nick. Yeah.
He's a mystery, but he's very open, but also very mysterious.
But that's, you want to, you so have cool. that, like your rock stars in that way.
Yeah, can I grab coffee with you?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, sure. Take it black.
But even, he's had all these quotes about like, there's a famous one. It's just like, the only thing you have about yourself ever is your flaws. So you need to really embrace that stuff. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that's just the way to like, of having personality, of playing music, of what we were talking about with guitar playing or how whatever your own personal sound is that embrace how you, because how you sound initially is way more unique than of you being influenced by things you enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
Even on the most basic level, but, because even like of like recording takes or something, like normally like the first take you do will have the most personality, and even if it's kind of sloppy, it's more true. And then the more something gets refined and milled over, like even Skeleton Tree, that is just
raw.
It's comprehensively like a huge mess and it's raw. But even of like of trying to, you go at home, you try to make your own music that sounds like that, you can't, because it's doing all these other things behind it, that it's not just a keyboard drone and a drum machine. It's, there's all these other textures going on.
Yeah, Jesus Alone in the YouTube comments, there was a comment, and you probably read it, But it was talking about how, like, the beauty in that album and that song is kind of the catharsis that Nick had.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, a live version of Girl in Amber, I think, where he cries. And I was just, like, really? I had to pause it because I was crying. And I was like, Nick. But it was just so beautiful because I, especially in pop music, it's so refined. And that was so not refined. And it was so real. And honest, and I just thought it was so beautiful.
Is even when I'm sure you thought this when he performed those songs, like Jesus Alone, is like, this is just so powerful. And just like, how could you then? Because before seeing it, it's like, how is he even going to perform this? Because even
he does
like,
it so well.
Yeah, like Matt Kirksey, my friend in the Lips, we both saw him in Dallas together, and then I drove out with a friend to Denver to see him for a couple years ago, and then he came out as well. But we've gone and seen the movies together, and
if
all
you
this.
You ever need a Nick Cave? Another Nick
now
Cave.
I know. Yeah, it's been hard. It's hard to find.
HMU,
of that,
I know.
Yeah, because I've tried to show it to my girlfriend. She's just like, "This isn't for me." It's like, no. I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, it's not Tom Waits, kind of Lou Reed, Leonard Cohen, not for everyone.
Exactly. But yeah, there's. Do you want to go over some favorite songs?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that. So I got
it's actually all Nick Cave, guys. All Nick Cave. Yeah, we turned into a Nick Cave podcast.
Yeah.
Which I'm all about. I think there's a podcast, if I remember correctly, that's just like dissecting Nick Cave.
Really?
And like everything that he's
his
done.
Subreddit's pretty good. I'll really? Go on it. Yeah, there's some pretty good footage and people just asking questions, but
oh wait, before we do that, Red Hand Files. Do you read that?
Oh yeah.
I love it so much. I post about it all the time, but yeah, it's so beautiful.
The one about
I hate how great he is.
No, it's just it's really helpful. Like my favorite one has been, I think you might have shared it too, is about creativity and doubting yourself.
Yeah, I think I did share it. Yeah,
just how it's just like how to the
he
person
talks about like a hobgoblin, I think.
Which that's such a good way to look at
he's
it.
Nick Cave.
Because you just even because you just have to like you just have to realize if even like having anxiety or depression, you're like, okay, well I know. This is a part of me because I've gone through better and worse times, but it's just something that is just always there. And then you realize like, well, this is just a part of me and I just have to work through it too. And obviously if people do need help medically, they should absolutely pursue that. But then some of it is acceptance of, I just have this lens that I kind of exist in of viewing the world. But with him, you know, he talked about that is with you and you have to let that doubt kind of influence you because that's something everybody, and it's more of like this, realizing that everybody has all these feelings.
Yeah.
So it's not unique to you, but everybody shares in this energy together.
Yeah, I think that's why the audience at Nick Cave was very, there are so many different types of people there, but I think it works so well because we all kind of understand that notion of like, we all have those things that kind of keep us up at night and like we feel bad about, but they kind of just make us and
exactly.
We can rejoice and have a community within that.
Yeah, and you have to. You can all be bonded by your misery.
Like
which
I
is
hate
bleak.
Myself. Me too.
Exactly, but that's okay though. You know, I mean, it's just admitting that everybody feels that way. And then the less you feel alone. But even of, that one. But he's had just a lot of really good poignant one. Or even okay, now I know what I was going to say. I remember him talking about in one of the documentaries. He was talking about every day I get up at 7 and then work from 8 to 5, and which is like. I think also is if you want to call yourself a musician or an artist in any capacity, you have this feeling that you're supposed to be inspired by the world around you constantly, which is you're always taking those things in. However, I think it's important to remember that you kind of, if you want to do it seriously, you do have to kind of treat it like a job and just show up and just like doing this. You just have to just do it and work on it and let it develop beyond of, I feel like writing a song today or I feel like journaling or whatever. But.
Yeah, he is very adamant about that and like so good at writing even if it sucks, which was hard for me a lot because I was like everything I write sucks and then I just didn't want to write. But I think you get through that eventually and like not everything you write is great, but you got something out of it.
Exactly.
And he has some stuff that I don't think is great in that it's not conventional and like it's really weird. And it still works for him, but it's because it's Nick Cave. But even like putting that out, I think is powerful. And I think that's why I love him because he doesn't care if it's bad or good. He's just kind of like going, he's doing it.
You just got to be honest about it.
Yeah, and I think Push the Sky Away was that for, and a lot of people kind of criticize it for that reason. But I thought it was cool.
Because yeah, like,
that's kind of why I like it, though.
Yeah, because he teaches those lessons of like you're not going to get much of anywhere if you play it really safe, and you got to like push yourself to want to do more, and don't be so stuck in how you think something should sound. And even I have all sorts of terrible songs and recordings like on my phone or on a computer, but you have to build that up, and you're like, well, I'm not ever going to show anybody to that.
Someone don't look through my phone.
But I'm just going to do it anyway. So
I think I was just talking to one of my artist friends who draws a lot, and I think she was talking about how she feels obligated to post everything she works on, and I was like, it's called a sketchbook, not a portfolio.
Exactly. Yeah, because you just give, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if it's him, but somebody said, some documentary podcast was saying that every time you do something like that, you do give a part of your soul up, because you, and you can get the endless conversation of social media and stuff, but it is part of it of like, you don't have to just give out yourself constantly. Like, oh, I need to share a picture of my instruments or of a song I'm working on. It's like, it's okay to be private about those. And that's kind of another thing for him. It's like, you don't have to be totally, even his level is different, obviously, but.
Yeah, he was, the way he handled his son's death is really great. Because he was like, I don't feel comfortable talking about it, and it's a boundary I'm not going to cross. And I was like, perfect.
Totally.
Perfect. Yeah. Absolutely.
I was expecting you to quit after that.
I think we all were. You know.
But even I had, to go on the Nick Cave fan nature, I had at least two or three people like, hey, did you see this? They would send that to me knowing that I like him so much. Like,
I
did. Thank you. This is weird. This is happening, but thank you. I guess.
My uncle lived in Germany in like the 80s, and he was, I think he said he saw Nick Cave. And, do you know about Neubauten?
Oh, yeah.
I can't say it. So I just say Neubauten.
Eistrinsen de Neubauten?
Yes.
Obelix.
I love them. They're one of my favorites. I think he saw them, is what he said.
Oh, wow.
In Germany sometime around that time. And I dragged him and his wife, who like didn't know who Nick Cave was at all. So we put on Murder Ballads on the way up there, her first entrance into Nick Cave. And then she just like sobbed at that. I think it was 20,000 Days is what I dragged her. No, it was Skeleton Tree, the documentary for that one, that she just like cried to, because she had lost her mom.
Oh,
was like, I totally relate to this. And I was like, I was going somewhere.
No, but I mean, those things representational of comfort, even like my grandmother passed away, but even on the way up to my grandmother's funeral, but we did though. No, I put on, I think we're trying to listen to Let Love In, that I was just like, this is effective. I was like, can I just listen to one song right now to really help? She's like, yeah, totally. So we put on Death Is Not the End, which is like at the end of Murder Ballads, and it's like we'd listen to it and feel very intensely, and then we'd turn it down. It's like, you know, what's really beautiful is that it's knowing that it's just the music is, everybody's involved with it. It's such a communal song, but everybody has a verse. The guy from the Pogues, Kylie Minogue. But it goes back and forth. And
Blix is on it too.
Oh yeah. He has a scary German voice. But listening to the song, it's about how death, you can look at it positive. Like there is an existence after, when we as people aren't able to comprehend what is beyond this mortal realm. However, it's just of like, suffering can also go beyond death, and it can get way worse. So it's acknowledging like, hey, we're both fucked, and then we're going to be okay. So it's just learn how to be okay in the middle of these two things.
That's interesting that you interpret it that way, because I always interpret it two different ways, that kind of like with the lens of like suicide ideation. It's like, death does not have to be the end result of what's happening. And that you can go past it. And there's also like, death is not the end, that people can outlive their body and have like their legacy. And
absolutely,
Nick Cave specifically has his music, Bowie has his music and his art and stuff like that.
That's great. No, but it's
interpretation.
But you can both like go, you and I can have these different interpretations of songs, and there's still like the fact that something can inspire two different kinds of thoughts, or that's a really cool thing that art can do that at all. But yeah, let's do some songs. I think this is a very difficult list to make.
He's got like a million songs.
I tried to do it as quickly as possible.
Is it just Nick Cave? Or did you do all
this is all just my favorite Nick Cave songs.
So Bad Seeds Project or like...
It's all Bad Seeds songs.
Because he's got for those of you who don't know, he's got Grinderman, Birthday Party, and he's doing scoring now.
Those are cool too.
Which is insane, because I would have never thought that Nick Cave would do scoring.
There's some footage online of him playing with, you know, Warren's other group, The Dirty Three.
I didn't know Warren had another group.
He has this really famous instrumental. It's like a guitar player, drums, and he plays violin over it. And that was his first thing ever. And they opened up for the Beastie Boys in the 90s. They were, yeah, really, and Beck, like, Warren. Weird, it's bizarre, but there's a thing of him, Nick, playing piano on top of the, and it's all this instrumental music. Yeah. But if you'd like it, but.
I will check it out.
So the first one I got is Do You Love Me, which opens up.
Yeah, that is a great opener.
Let Love In. No, and insane. My favorite quote of beyond going into it more is that when Bolixo was talking about, he uses like a noise. There's a documentary where he talks about using a noise gate on his guitar. Yeah, so every time there's a snare hit, it's just like, it sounds like a tremolo, but it's this other sort of thing. But even of how he adds guitar on all that stuff, and it's there and it's not. But once you really look at it, you're like, oh, this is extremely thought out, even though it's kind of atonal at times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got that as my number one. Then, yeah, I saw him in Washington, D.C., I think a couple days after that Bomb Factory show.
Okay.
And I've seen him four times, and that was the only time he's ever played that. And I was just like, oh my God, really? This is all. He hadn't played that. I mean, it's a popular song, but he did way more record heavy stuff previously.
He played, I forgot. It's like, it reminds me of the Bad Seeds version of Jangling Jack. Because I think Jangling.
Oh, Loverman?
No. I can't believe I'm forgetting it. But I'll remember it eventually.
I think I might have it on here.
But it was. Do you?
City of Refuge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played that. And I was like, he's playing this? I'm so confused.
I know. But it was just so good. Builds up. But
yeah.
So I got that. And then I think for my second song, it was one of the first ones I ever liked from him. It's Cabin Fever.
Okay.
It's that second song on his first record.
Yeah. His first record's not my favorite record.
I know.
But I think I just haven't spent time with it.
It's a lot. Even how they play From Her to Eternity now, it's just it makes like, okay, that is worth going back to. But yeah, that one is just so, guitars on the side and all these other, Einstein Sense and Neubauten sort of influence in it. It's just real extreme and crazy.
Yeah, I joke that early Bad Seeds is just birthday party.
No, but you're totally right, though. It's even like more deconstructed in ways. But then let's see. So then for song number three, I put Oh My Lord, which is...
I love that song.
Man, that one gets so intense. Beautiful. But yeah, so Oh My Lord, just how that... Because even of all his soft piano-y stuff, he got really... I feel more drawn to that No More Shall We Part over The Boatman's Call.
Okay, yeah.
But that one, just that song, just builds up and builds up and just kind of stops really well. Number four got Magneto from Skeleton Tree, which, man, that was gnarly.
Fair play. Yeah, that album is...
It's so...
You can't see it, but I'm just like shaking my head.
I remember just seeing that in the... Because I remember...
Just like, build.
Did you see it in theaters when it came out?
Yes.
It's like you hadn't heard any of it before that?
I don't remember. No, I think... I listened to it before.
Because the movie came out on a certain day and it was playing in Oklahoma, actually. Like at the.
I went to the. It was. I think there was only. Wasn't it like a dingy mall?
Windsor 10?
I don't remember.
I think I was.
I think a shooting happened there at one point.
It looked like that might happen there.
Okay, so yeah, I think.
But that's where I guess we must have both been there. Yeah, but.
Yeah.
Because I think the only thing they released before that was Jesus Alone. So then you're like, I don't know what any of this is going to sound like. And it was just like them talking about the recording. But that one just have had because that was around the time that I think that Twin Peaks, The Return was out.
So that
sort of nature of it was just like, oh, I love this. This is just creepy.
Yeah,
so.
I don't know. That album is just so good. It's good. he plays a lot with like release and like tension building and just like wallowing in things. And it's my cup of tea.
No, yeah. And it shows you how to like those sort of, and that's the fun thing about him is that as much as you can like him over anything else, you can't really emulate how you can take a lot of inspiration, but there's no way to really sound that way. So, I mean, I've always thought he's like, you can just listen to it, but you're not going to be like, oh, that's not an obvious Nick Cave line you're playing because the songs are written in such a different way. But it's such a good lesson in like dynamics of songwriting and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people didn't like some of the tracks on there because he, like Jesus Alone kind of just like builds and builds and never really releases. And people were like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't like this. And I'm like, but that's the point.
Exactly.
It's kind of like, listen to the lyrics and you can see that he's purposely building things and not releasing it for a reason.
And then you can still present that with a song with separate parts, even though it's just this like that grumbling keyboard over and over again. But like that one's number five, got City of Refuge, like we were talking about. But and that's one of my favorite ones from Tender Prey.
Mm. I haven't sat with Tender Prey very much.
That one near the end, it starts, that one has the most, because the ending of it gets really kind of, because they have a song called like Sugar, 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 and Slowly Goes the Night. And it gets,
yeah.
Because if like Let Love In, like near the end, you have Thirsty Dog. So it gets like, yeah. Up, it's more of like a set list. And then Tender Prey is more of like a mood it does. Okay. And I know Kid Congo Powers is on that record too. Oh.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
He did like two of them, but he has interviews. He's like, yeah, we're all just stuck on way too many drugs and making these weird loops like the and bad stuff. But yeah, what's another one? The number six, I got Train of Suffering, which is they had. So I saw a clip of it on. That might have been another one of the first things I saw because that's number. It's like four or five on The Firstborn is Dead.
Yeah.
So that's like, and they were playing the song live and they had Kid Congo Powers from, I don't know if you know, he's from the Cramps and. Gun Club.
Oh, yeah. I do remember. Yeah.
He has that band, the Pink Flying Monkey Birds.
Yeah.
He sounds like Vincent Price, kind of what he sings. Uh-oh. But, yeah, there's like a clip of him, and it's just this almost Gun Club sort of song, but the songs get so intense. It's like someone's pushing you down. Like that, the sound commercials where that guy would be sitting in the couch with the tie, and he'd be in front of a stereo, and it'd blow all of his clothes back. It's just like, what's going on?
That's so funny. But, side note, Gun Club's like one of my favorite.
Oh
ones.
My, yeah. The
Jeffrey.
Oh, what's the first Jeffrey Lee Pierce?
Yeah.
What's the name of the first one?
The first album,
Fire of Love.
Fire of Love. Yeah. I think was that their first. Yeah, that's their first album. I think the album's called Juno. Is that what it's called?
Ooh, that's a good one too.
That's my favorite album of theirs.
They did one. Is it Juno? No, because that's produced by Robin Guthrie.
Oh, I know.
From
no
Cocteau
idea.
Twins.
Really?
Yeah, the that Cocteau makes Twins sense. Guitar that player makes so produced much it. Sense. Okay. Is that Juno? It has whatever one has Thunderhead on it.
Yeah, I think that's Juno. No, I think that's the third one that's like City of, I don't know.
It's like the Las Vegas-y looking.
Yeah.
One. I can't remember. One. Cocteau Twins are good too. But
yeah, oh, great.
That's
yeah.
another podcast.
They need a.
But yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's but just yeah, start but a he, cave. Podcast yeah. also into the Cocteau Twins one.
Yeah, but he produced one of the record. Look into that. But
I didn't know that.
Then number seven, I got Up Jump the Devil from Tender.
That Price. Was my first favorite Nick Cave song.
Really,
what got me into it?
Really,
I was on Tumblr at the time and I listened to this. I'm like, what is this? This is insane, and it's still one of the creepiest songs I ever heard. But it's so Nick Cave.
Exactly.
And you're just like, oh, I think it was a good first entrance into Nick Cave because it gives you an idea of everything about Nick Cave. Because like Up Jump the Devil's already religious imagery, the piano parts, the way he sings it, it's just insane.
It's like sloppy, and then they're just like, this sounds like this. My favorite quote from, I've read about somebody's description, I don't know if it's a Rolling Stone article, but somebody said they're the Devil's Lounge Band.
Totally makes sense. And I'm like, oh my gosh,
it's perfect, because that one too is just this weird drawl, and it's kind of like sloppy, but it makes sense. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Just all that chaos just makes so much sense. So that was your first. That's a good first one to get into.
I'm
wow.
so glad.
Yeah,
because it just showed up on my feed, and I only knew Birthday Party and Neubauten, and then I was like, I don't like Nick Cave. It's not heavy because I was really into heavy music.
Oh, same. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'm dumb.
Yeah. Because it's like you listen to it, and even like it took me a lot of listens to like whole records. I'm like, I don't like this. And then you just get more and more. I don't know if your music taste expands. Because I'd say, because you get like those records where all the songs sound the same, and his are just what albums are, I feel, supposed to be. It's its own identity. That's why the Smiths did singles, and then they released albums. Because that's why they're supposed to be disassociated from one another.
Oh, yeah.
Then number eight, I got Lime Tree Arbor from Boatman's Call.
Yeah.
Good, this little chill song. Let's see. Number nine, I don't know if you ever listened to Nocturama?
Yes.
So I got A Wonderful Life. That one, or that song's really, because it has that creepy sort of airy smokiness about it. And even that record's good because it ends with Babe, I'm on that 14-minute balls of the wall sort of thing.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Velvet Underground and like what they used
to do. That's a great,
And I was just like, yes.
Have you watched the music video for that?
No, I've been told to because I'm... This is how much of a nerd I am, but I'm part of a Nick Cave like shitposting Facebook event, Facebook group, and it's just like a bunch of Nick Cave memes, and like Nocturama is like the butt of the joke of that group.
That's funny.
Because I don't know why, but...
Even he had one of those emails about that. He's just like, everybody has their own Nocturama in their life. But yeah, that one, I don't know. Yeah, that last one that has like a video that's like pretty like not PC in a lot of ways, but it's pretty that's funny. My kid, but
yeah.
And I think my number 10 is a Hallelujah from also on No More Shall We Part.
Is it a No More? I thought it was on Boatman. No. Might be. Maybe. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
But
everyone
yeah.
is Hallelujah.
But that mix of crazy, but I was, you can go into so many depths, but those are, I think, the 10 that I return to. So
okay.
Not indicative of favorite albums, but.
Hey, okay. Listen to my podcast, my episode that will be coming eventually, and I will have mine.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
so I got a lot of newer stuff from him because I like the atmospheric and drone-y stuff he's been doing lately. Especially with Warren, who's like a genius with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just seeing how somebody can create music and what you can, you don't have to use guitars all the time. You can just try stuff just for
the
pure
piano, which is like kind of unconventional with the music he makes, but it's also like not Coldplay. Yeah.
But exactly. It's just, like you said, it's just you keep going back to this word raw. I mean, it's such a real expression of everything.
Well, I think you said before that he's not like a trained musician. So I think a lot of it has to do with that because he kind of just like lays a foundation and then Warren can take over whatever.
Exactly. Because that's even I remember getting into guitar and I was like in eighth grade. And then you get into like Judas Priest and these metal bands. It's like, it's like, I'm not good enough to play this music and also don't really like it all that much. And then I remember my cousin bought me a copy of Dirty from Sonic Youth.
That's
and that grade? Blew my mind. Yeah. Like that.
I think that's when I found out Sonic Youth too. And I was just like, my brain fried. And
yeah. I was like, what is this?
This is insane. Yeah.
Even just the like, oh, I like them. And like, then they have a Letterman performance where they put baseball bats through their guitars.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I love this way more than tech. This is so much more interesting. Yeah, this is so much more gnarly. And
yes.
Because even there's like a drum break, and it's just the most simple drum beat, but it's just like, oh, this is perfect. Every song of this aspect of the song is perfect.
Kim would also like tune her bass differently sometimes too.
But yeah, that sort of thing. And I'm trying to think of other sort of more that song really stuck out to me always. Then anything I ever went back to, it was always getting into Nick Cave and appreciating it from not looking at it from a guitar angle, just of how a band can accompany a singer.
Yeah.
Is just of like, oh, that's just such a, like a Marty, the bass player, how he in the midst and wrangles in even all the more ethereal parts going on. There's always still that through line.
How has his lyric writing influenced you? Because you said you went back
for
your English lit degree.
I never really ever listened to lyrics before that. I mean, you say things subconscious, and now like you listen back to old songs you used to like, you're like, ooh, that was really questionable. I didn't know what I was saying. But of getting into him and just if even my father uses really big words, which is...
He's a defense attorney.
Defense attorney, yeah, which I never saw as an elitist thing. I always just saw it as, oh, that's a really good thing that you can make your language so exact that you can say a singular word that encompasses a whole sentence of an idea. It takes a whole sentence to describe
that's
what the word means.
Yeah.
Which is, I've always been very just drawn to and just of his writings, and it's made me want to, like, I go to UCO again now to complete an English literature degree, and I've even had a couple papers that I named after Nick Cave songs for nobody's entertainment but my own.
Can
knowing
you read
that,
them?
I can find them, but I think I named one, Let Love, I'd have to go back, but it's named, it's songs
love.
Or... It's this exact stuff like that.
Yeah,
but,
that's so cool.
But it's just been such a big motivational factor, even just to be like, oh, just do your own thing and don't be comfortable with your own neuroses and how you want to exist and stuff. So I think that's taught me a lot of being a big fan of his. Mm-hmm. Then I'll go through periods where I'll just listen to it incessantly, and then other times I'm like, I need to let that go because that's all I get to where I think about.
Well, he's got enough that you can do that.
Exactly.
And it's all kind of different, so it gives you kind of that breath of, like, it's not boring.
Exactly.
Because you can put different albums on, like, Murder Ballads. It's completely different from, like, Push the Sky Away.
Exactly. And it's just, you can get listening to music that makes you uncomfortable, I think, is initially is like something appealing, and then you, like, understand, like, oh, I'm not afraid of it anymore. I kind of understand what's going on. But
I was never afraid of birthday party or anything like
really?
That. But I know a lot of people were. I think I was just kind of like, you know.
Totally.
I was really into like Depeche Mode at the time. So like the weird kind of like cross dressing and stuff was like, yeah.
Totally, I get it.
The poofy hair, yeah.
But yeah, but that's yeah, the.
His lyric writing definitely taught me a lot about storytelling. I haven't read his books. I really need to. Mm-hmm. I'll get to it.
I would say, but, so I have all, so I haven't read In the Ass All the Angel, but I have the audio book of The Death of Bunny Monroe, which is, yeah, he reads it and Warren does all the music behind it. Oh, so I would say, out of any of his things, I would definitely get the audio book of that.
And he reads it.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's
just, I can imagine him like, blah, blah.
It's just so perverse and subversive and stuff. It's really kind of just like, this is a creepy guy, but it's just, he's just portraying this character, which is, I don't know. It's a good read, but yeah, the Sick Back song's good. And then someone made a comic book. It's this graphic.
I heard.
You should read that. So it has the character from the Hammer song in it.
Yeah.
It has these, they're not the titular characters, but they would be the characters that the songs are about. So I can't remember if there's one about Mercy Seat, but it's the guy who's in the electric chair. It's from his perspective.
Yeah.
There's a couple other ones, but they'll go through and they'll talk about the characters and I think they even go through the main protagonist in The Ass All the Angel.
Oh, cool. So. Is that your list or do you want to keep going?
I mean, that's my good, you know, we
just
could.
Just Nick Cave. You can talk about other things in Nick Cave too.
Okay. Other favorite stuff. I mean, at that same time, I mean, I think, this is funny, just going off subject now, but some of my favorite records, there's like a Johnny Cash live record from San Quentin I really like. And he plays a Wanted Man, which Nick Cave covered, which I was like, oh, and then he adds a lot more weird verses and stuff. But
yeah, there's like this joke going on right now that all my friends are a part of, where it's like Nick Cave and Tom Waits and Leonard Cohen, all those like very deep voiced weird guys, and it's kind of like sad bastard music, and I'm like, yeah,
I love that though.
I'm like, that's me. Yeah.
Some of his, there's like a good Leonard Cohen interview where he's at a Buddhist monastery talking about depression, and the person asking the questions is kind of an adult, but he's just is like, yeah, it's just something I've just kind of struggled with. It's like, what do you, so it's just somebody leaving you? It's just like, well, it's not, he's kind of offended. It's like, well, you can't really say it that not that complex. You're making that way too simple of a concept of why somebody goes through suffering and why everybody goes through suffering. And she just kind of schools her own. He's like, don't, you know, belittle the, you know, the mental nature of it.
Yeah. I really enjoy reading Leonard Cohen's discussions about stuff like that, because it's very honest and very like, there's not one solution to such a complex thing.
Exactly. And everybody's, it's like, and everybody's like,
just eat more vegetables. And it's like, stop.
Yeah. It's just like,
I eat broccoli every day. Stop.
It's like everybody's joined in the struggle, but everybody's approaches to conquering it is different for everyone. But I think within all of it, it's like, it is up to everybody to like try to, you know, you can do these things to make yourself better of whatever that means to you as a person. So, but all goes back to Nick Cave.
Okay. Nick Cave is the answer to everything.
Yeah.
I was sitting down the other day and it dawned on me that I will be alive to see Nick Cave die. And I was like, nope.
Right.
I gotta go distract myself.
It's a weird thought.
It's going to be a sad day. But yeah. There's a lot of overlap to me with like Bowie and like Nick Cave, and that they're both like these entities that just like got it.
Totally.
But yeah, I love them both.
And you find these, even for reasons of listening to music, I know for me, like I got into like, and I still really like that band Air, and they have that record Moon Safari. Then that kind of led me into getting into Can and more of that kind of krautrock. But listening to music to me has kind of been a way to calm myself into what makes me not feel very anxious right now, or what is music that would be beneficial for me not to be anxious at the moment. So, but yeah, I'm trying to think. So that sort of stuff, and even just the, you listen to Tangerine Dream, that's really calming, or whatever.
I'm still yet to get into them fully. I mean, like, I know they're like singles and stuff, but I mean, everyone I know loves Tangerine Dream. So
is that record Phaedra? There's like, you can go any sort of different stuff that's just more keyboards, or stuff that just has drums or whatever. Okay. But cool. I think it's just made me, because I've always felt a lot of pressure on myself of like, I'm not listening to enough music, or I'm not listening to other stuff that people like. Mm-hmm. And then you find these things that you find a lot of comfort in, like
Nick Cave. That's what it's about at the end of the day. It's like, it doesn't matter if you know two bands or 200 bands, as long as it fuels you.
Exactly. And I feel like some people, they have a complex about wanting to be just inundated with influences, and I almost feel like there's times of even of writing music or going to record, I don't want to listen to any music at all, because I just want to, like, what is just going to come out of my head at definitely. This moment, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. Yeah. Is that it?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Cool. Tommy, thanks for coming on my podcast.
Thanks for having me, Stephanie.
Where can we follow you and all of your musical endeavors?
Yeah. You can find Esther Drang pretty easily. I think it's The Drang on Instagram. Net is Net in Space.
Yes.
On they Instagram. Are on Spotify
and then
everything
else.
As unsearchable of a name as that could be. Then you'll find us on Instagram and stuff. And then I have my own handles at Tommy Funds, and you can post about all my junk. So yeah.
And all descriptions will be in all links will be in the description, so you should be able to find them. Mm. And do you know when the album will come out? Can you talk about it?
No, yeah. You know, we're like 90% done right now. Cool. So it's just the monotony of endless tracking and how a cymbal can sound, all that kind of shit. we're doing that.
That's so it sucks.
Right. It's just like, oh my God. It's hard for me to think of music beyond just getting, it's like, okay, this is what we do it live. But luckily everybody else in the band is like, no, we need to add these little, a shaker or like a tambourine. So we have like two more days, and I mean, maybe come out by the end of the year, maybe not. Cool. I think we're going to kind of get it really crafted. And like,
you played a few new songs at the Deli gig.
We did. Yeah.
I noticed, I was like, I don't know these songs, but they were really good.
It's a bunch of that. So then we're kind of shaping up stuff more in a studio. And then once we have the final version of how we're going to play it, then we'll learn it. So
that's how it usually goes.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, let's just, cause it's, you get stuck in like punk or garage. Like, we learned it in my house an hour ago. Let's just play it now.
I described Ned as synth punk. Mm-hmm. So very like early Gary Newman to my friends when I was like, listen to this, and they liked it. So
yeah. Hey, all right.
Lots of synth stuff, and I love synth music, so
it's been a fun thing.
I'm excited to hear it.
Thank you. We're just going to kind of not get too eager about it and get it really crafted, and then kind of just push it out to maybe shop it around as much as you can do that on your own. So
definitely.
We'll see. Maybe end of the year, maybe not. I don't know.
Soon we'll find out. It'll happen, I hope. We all hope. Tommy, thanks again.
Oh, thanks for having me, Stephanie.